Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Take Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Solo pod today, going stag, as they say, like the lonely kid at a dance. Like the lonely kid at the prom, at the homecoming, going stag. I actually was wondering where the going stag came from, and the Yahoo answer that came up as the best answer for where going stag came from is someone named EMW, who said, a stag deer is an adult male. A stag animal is an adult male that has been castrated. Thus, the term stag or going stag means going without a woman. If that's true, which I believe it is, we needed to find a better term than going stag. There's a difference between choosing to go to something alone and being castrated. I'm no biological expert. I'm not a scientist of any kind. But I do know that there is a huge difference between choosing to go to an event alone, whether it's because you can or can't get a date, and not having every item at your disposal as a male. So maybe going stag. I'm definitely not going stag. We're not going stag today. We'll just call it the solo pod. Ask for your questions online. As you know, you can ask for a question to be answered at Talk Hoops or at I Am Basketball. As long as you tag it with the hashtag EOB Pod, we will try to answer them. And you guys submit some pretty good questions and usually have a lot of fun doing this. So let's jump right into the questions after talk about last night's games. We had the Spurs winning streak, 19-game winning streak, coming to an end. I still think Greg Popovich is the coach of the year. It wasn't just the streak talking. What he's done with that group, the minutes management, the injuries, and the fact that they have the best record in the league, like, he's just been the best coach. And I wish we could make sure that he's going to get that award this year. No offense to Terry Stotts and Jeff Hornacek and Doc Rivers and all those guys, but I really do just think it's Popovich's to lose. They got handled in the second half by the Thunder. I know there were some Spurs fans that weren't too happy with the officiating. Spurs only went to the free throw line 12 times. Tim Duncan had 8 of those 12 free throw attempts. Kawhi Leonard got into foul trouble, didn't play for a lot of the third quarter, didn't start coming out of halftime, and that's when the Thunder really took advantage. They I think had a 32-20 quarter. Kevin Durant ended up with 28 points. Russell Westbrook had 27, and the Thunder just, they seem to be the better team every time they're at full strength against this team. I think they've won, counting since they went down 0-2 in the 2012 playoffs, I believe the Thunder are 10-2 since that point. That included 4 straight in that series. I think they're 10-2 against the Spurs. They're just maybe too athletic, and Durant and Westbrook are just so hard to deal with anyway that it's a tough matchup for even a brilliant team like the Spurs. And then the other game was the Mavericks closing out, almost blowing yet another fourth quarter lead to the Clippers this year. It's happened, I think, 3 times where they've at least been leading at half or leading into the fourth quarter, and then they blow the lead. The Clippers have always come back and won. Clippers made a furious comeback over a 4.5-minute stretch during the end of the fourth quarter, but the Mavericks managed to get a couple of stops, and I think Darren Collison had just a horrible 3-point attempt. J.J. Redick missed badly on a 3-point attempt when they really could have taken away all momentum and all confidence from the Mavericks. Mavericks bounced back, hit some free throws, and got a much-needed win. I believe they are 7th now in the West. Does that sound right? They're a half game ahead of the Memphis Grizzlies and the Phoenix Suns for 7th in the West, and a game and a half behind the Golden State Warriors at 45-31. I don't know. I don't think we should be too worried about the Clippers losing that game. Blake had a nice game. Chris Paul was pretty good. J.J. Redick didn't hit shots in his first game back. Big Baby's not in shape. I think someone said he's like 315 pounds, or they say he's 315 pounds at this point. It's got to be more. Like, he looks like he's moving horribly out there. He doesn't seem to have any kind of rhythm. I think he'll be fine for them in the playoffs. You're not asking him for a huge role in the playoffs. You'll rely on Jordan and Blake Griffin, aside from foul trouble here and there. But Big Baby just looks so out of shape. The Darren Collison, Chris Paul backcourt continues to work. I said that on the State Farm playoff assist video that I'm doing every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You guys should check it out. There's a plug. That the Collison Paul backcourt this year is, they're plus 14 per 100 possessions. So they've been destroying teams when those two are on the floor together. And it seems to be a really nice combination for them. Let's get to your questions again. Hashtag EOB pod. is how you submit them. Or you can email zach.harper@cbsinteractive.com. But Twitter is the preferred method. I know some of you guys usually have longer questions, and I try to email you back and answer those. @Joshua_Riddell, any projected non-lottery players you are enamored with right now? I swear this doesn't have to do with just the dunk contest from last night, which, check out the college dunk contest. It was insane. Marcus Lewis put on a show, but he ended up winning. But Adrian Payne was just fantastic. Adrian Payne's a guy I'm enamored with. Like, this guy can shoot. He can shoot free throws. He can post up. He's a good roll man. He's a good defender. He's got an enormous wingspan. He's 6'10". He's got like a 38-inch vertical, they said on the telecast last night. This guy's just he's been fantastic all of his years at Michigan State. And, I think he's projected to go like early 20s, late teens in terms of most mock drafts. I really think this guy should be a lottery pick. Like, someone asked me last night, could the Wolves trade down to get him? And I said, hell, if the Wolves have the 13th pick, take him at 13. That's a nice rotational big man to throw in. They're probably not going to have Dante Cunningham back. We don't know if they'll have Turioff back. So you add him as a fourth big for now, and then maybe if Love leaves or if you decide to move Peck down the road, you've got a nice player there. But I love Adrian Payne. He's got a great story. He's just a really good player. I think he would be fantastic. Also, Jordan Adams. I don't think Jordan Adams is regarded as a lottery pick right now. Jordan Adams, Kyle Anderson, those guys from UCLA, just phenomenal, phenomenal athlete. With Adams, good scorer. Should be a good defender. Kyle Anderson's a fantastic playmaker. Really odd body and really moves kind of weird, but he's got a great wingspan, and he can really play and make plays. He's kind of like, I've described him as Royce White without the baggage. So I think that those guys, any of those three guys, you should be thrilled if your team ends up with them. @CRVWFORD, still assuming that means Crawford in a way. David Crawford, since we haven't had this talk in a couple of weeks, who is the MVP? No one's had a real defining moment since LeBron 61. I agree. I do think LeBron has not played quite as well as Kevin Durant since that time. The broken nose really seemed to kind of pull him back in terms of whatever momentum he was building. And I think Durant's just been better over the course of these few weeks since that explosion. And Durant, Durant's just had a better season. And there's nothing wrong with LeBron. Nothing wrong with him not being the MVP. If you decided that LeBron was your MVP this season, I wouldn't quibble with you. But I just think Durant, it's Durant's award. I don't think anything can be done in the last week and a half to really change that. And I expect him to be voted the MVP at the end of the season. @KTV1999, Taylor Vance says, are the Grizz really going to screw this up? The Grizzlies, I was shocked. I went on Memphis radio on Wednesday before the Grizzlies Wolves game, and the Wolves just seemed like they didn't have any fire left, they didn't have any energy, and I expected the Grizzlies to blow them out because the Grizzlies usually beat the Wolves anyway. It's a horrible matchup for the Wolves, so it was expected that the Wolves would just kind of roll over and let the Grizzlies take that win, and the Wolves ended up winning by 14 points. Rony Turioff came back, had a great game. Kevin Love had another triple-double. They're 3-0 in triple-doubles. Why doesn't he just get a triple-double every time? They'd win the playoffs, win the championship, they'd do it all. But yeah, they dropped that game, and that was a really bad game for them to drop. I mean, if you think about it, they would be in the 7th seed right now, and instead they're still tied with Phoenix. I know they have the tiebreaker right now, but their final stretch of games, they have Denver tonight, then they're in San Antonio, they're home for Miami, home for Philly, in LA for the Lakers, in Phoenix, home for Dallas. I mean, your season's probably going to come down to the Phoenix and Dallas games anyway. So if they can be favorable in those matchups, then they'll be fine. But you cannot drop a game like that to the Wolves. That's a killer. That is a potential season killer. And I'm just shocked that Zebo played so poorly. I'm shocked that Mike Conley played so poorly. And they didn't have really anything in that game aside from Marc Gasol. It was kind of amazing. @HowDrewYouDo, my friend who got me the Tara Reid follow and birthday wishes, ask, Pau Gasol's season being over due to vertigo is a perfect way for his Lakers career to end, right? I don't know that his Lakers career is going to be over, because Kobe has made comments about bringing Pau back, so maybe we'll see him at a discounted rate sticking around for a year. But him becoming Lucille too, now, I don't think Vertigo's not like a serious thing. I know you can deal with it, you can manage it. I would assume you can cure it, so I don't expect it to be like a debilitating thing for him long term. So I think it's okay to joke about. Like, he's become Lucille too from Arrested Development, and that's kind of hilarious. It's kind of perfect. I'm sure it's awful for him to deal with, but the entire Lakers season has been riddled with Vertigo. Like, they keep falling down for no reason. Well, there is a reason. They don't have much talent on the team. But they keep falling down. There's nothing they can do to get back up and steady themselves. And with all the trade rumors and stuff Gasol has had to endure over the years, it does kind of make sense that his season would end due to Vertigo. And his Lakers career at that. At Bill Monty _ has a great question. Seems like finishing around the rim is a hard skill to improve. Ethan Sherwood-Strauss would agree with you. I think I do, too. Is it possibly because it's hard to simulate in practice? That does seem like a very improbable thing to improve in practice, because you're constantly trying to make sure that you get good work in while not getting injured. Like, there aren't a lot of scrimmages, there aren't a lot of spirited scrimmages once you really get into the season, because guys are resting, you don't have enough healthy guys, you have to make sure you don't overwork them, and it's hard to really get all of those practices scheduled and really done. I mean, I know a lot of teams forego practices because they'd rather save their guys' legs. So that is a hard thing to simulate. I would say the best way to do it is you have coaches, you know, Bill Bano's done it here in Minneapolis when he was here prior to this season. You have coaches that have those big arm pads. They beat the hell out of big guys down low, trying to teach them how to finish through contact. You do get that with some of the smaller guys as well. But I would imagine with the speed of the game, trying to control yourself, like that pad work isn't enough to really simulate, you know, what it's like to finish around the rim. And a lot of guys, you know, you have to get over that mental fear of getting your shot blocked. Getting your shot blocked is not a bad thing. It means you're aggressive and you can learn from it. You kind of have to fail to learn how to succeed in that sense. But yeah, it's probably impossible to simulate and practice on a regular basis. How Drew You Do has another question. Who is your starting five on the NBA all-pudgy team? That's a good question. I mean, I guess Andre Miller has to be my point guard. I put Marcus Thornton at the two. Paul Pierce and Carmelo Anthony as my 3-4, because I'm going small ball here. And then, do I go Big Baby at the five? I think I would go Big Baby. We're going really small and rotund on this one. So I'll go Big Baby at the five. That's where we're going with current players. At Sam Esfandiari, hope I said that right, responded to How Drew You Do and said, "Oh, before I listen, I need to consider my own. Antoine Walker is my first thought." If we're going all time, Antoine's definitely going to get there. Oliver Miller is going to be there. I'd go Boris Diaw for sure. I need a shooting guard. Mitch Richmond was a little rotund for a while, so I'd go Mitch Richmond. Hall of Famer Mitch Richmond, by the way. Congratulations to Mitch Richmond and Alonzo Mourning. If you haven't done it yet, please go check out the CBSSports.com rabbit hole post I did today. It's all Alonzo Mourning, kind of commemorating his career with the news that he has been reportedly enshrined into the Basketball Hall of Fame. At Ollie Noonan asks, who wins a one-on-one matchup between Derek Fisher and Andre Miller right now? It would definitely be Andre Miller. He's got a perfect old man game. Derek Fisher doesn't really have that much of an old man game. He's got a little bit of stuff here and there. He can back you down a little bit. But Miller's just such a better player right now. I know he's not the shooter that Derek Fisher is, but you're going one-on-one. You don't really need shooting. You just kind of back guys in, go to the basket. Miller's so good at that, so good in the mid-range. And I really think Derek Fisher would have a hard time stopping that big behind that Andre Miller has. And really throws around like a wily dump truck. At Young _Olaf asks, how does Andrew Bynum fit into the Pacers rotation for the rest of the season playoffs? I don't think he does. I really don't see why they would risk it at this point. He's not good anymore. He's not in shape. I know he's working to get back into shape to be able to play. I just don't see it working at all. I don't see how he finds a way to fit in. I would much rather go with the combination of Roy Hibbert, Jan Mahimi, you know, Luis Scola, David West. Those are better players right now for what they do, more reliable. Jan Mahimi is a really solid backup center who plays really good defense. And I think that, you know, trying to fit Bynum in this late in the season and for the playoffs, you know, maybe he can give you one good stretch during a game, hopefully against the Heat if you're a Pacers fan. But I, like, you cannot count on him to be good enough. Like, he was bad. Like, he had a little bit of an impact at certain times with the Cavaliers this year, but he was so bad. And with the struggles that, the Pacers are finding with continuity on offense anyway, throwing one more variable into the mix, I just don't see how that's a good situation. At E-Jiggle wants to know, polarizing topic and this week's hot topic, what's your stance on potentially eradicating conferences and divisions? I'm all for eradicating divisions. I don't see the point of them anymore other than to sell some division championship t-shirts and raise a division championship banner if your team has not had the history of a Lakers or a Celtics or what have you. But eradicating conferences, I'm not a fan of. I know people say, oh, with travel today, it's not that big of a deal. It is a big deal. Talk to any NBA player, any coaching staff about traveling in the NBA. It's still traveling. It's still going a long way. You can't have that many cross-country travels. And it really does affect these guys. And I think that conferences at least kind of keeps that scheduling in line to be easier. Otherwise, you're asking, hey, why don't we get to play the Sixers five times a year, four times a year? Why don't we get to play the Celtics four times a year? Why don't we get to play the Magic four times a year? Assuming those teams are bad again for the next couple of years. And I think it would lead to more of a schedule imbalance, whereas now it's easier on most teams for their travel to keep it with conferences. And I don't care if one conference is better than the other. That doesn't really matter to me. And I think it's going to be somewhat cyclical at some point. I think we'll head back to the East being better when all this young talent keeps going into the East. Eventually it'll even out or the power will switch. I don't know what. But in terms of eradicating conferences, like, no, keep the East, keep the West, get rid of divisions, and then, you know, top eight, and get into your playoffs that way. At TLU 00, great idea or greatest? Hall of Fame puts a bar inside that just ABA players hang out in, drink Crown, and tell stories. Yes. It's both a great idea and the greatest. I would pay so much money to go to this in Springfield, Massachusetts, and I would just want to hang out with George Gervin. I listened to the BS report from a while back, I think just after the All-Star break, with George Gervin talking to Bill Simmons about just his playing days, and it was one of the most enjoyable listening experiences I've had. I definitely recommend going and checking it out if you haven't already. It's just fun to listen to him talk about that stuff and talk about, you know, what play was like back then and certain players that maybe we don't remember in such a fond light. Listen to him. Imagine getting to listen to Moses Malone, getting to listen to Dr. J, getting to listen to Rick Barry and all these guys. It would be so fun. It would just be so fun to listen. Like, anytime you get to talk to an old player and have them tell stories of what it was like with the guys they played with, like, it's a really cool fondness and reverence that they portray, and it's a great way to learn about the game. It's a great way to connect with the game, and I think you even get them a little liquored up, this is an even better idea. They'll let some stories out that they shouldn't have, and I don't see how this can possibly go wrong. At Santru Bogut, will the Heat or two questions? Will the Heat or Pacers pose any challenge to the Knicks in the first round, or will the Zen effect be too overwhelming? I'm going to assume they can pose a little bit of a challenge. I mean, I guess we all assume that the Knicks will roll in five, but I think they can be a little bit of a challenge. And then also ask, is there a first round series in the atrocious East that would actually be compelling for you at all? I am interested in a Raptors Wizards series. I would be interested in a Raptors Bobcat series, even Bulls Nets. I'm starting to come around on it a little bit. But I definitely think Raptors Wizards or Raptors Bobcats would be a lot of fun, and we have a chance at either one. At Hal Brown NBA wants to know, what team could use Chris Smith for the playoffs the most? Somehow he's still available. Put him back on the Knicks. Imagine what Phil Jackson and the Zenness could do for Chris Smith's game. He could become an NBA All-Star, or at worst, Sixth Man of the Year. I really think that this is something. Come on. How has Ricky Davis not gotten a job yet? Chris Smith had a job this year. I know there was nepotism involved, but how has Ricky Davis not been on an NBA roster, but Chris Smith has? This is ridiculous. At Sajad_AM, hopefully I didn't mess up your name, is it too early to talk about offseason moves? What will Houston do with Ashik, Lynn, and Parsons? Well, they still have a team option on Parsons for next year for just under $1 million. Such a bargain. So they'll pick that up. And maybe start trying to figure out a free agency number for him in 2015. So he's locked in. Unless they need to move him to bring in a third star, I don't see why they would. Ashik, they'll try to move, but it's going to be tough while he's only an $8.3 million cap hit for the Rocket or for whatever team has him, you have to pay him $15 million of that. That's a little hard to sell for some owners when you're not getting an all-star player in return. Otis Smith no longer has a job, and Joe Dumars hopefully won't have a job anymore. Well, not hopefully. I feel bad. Joe Dumars is probably a nice guy, but he's just a terrible GM. I hope for the Pistons fans' sake he doesn't. So that's going to be hard to deal that kind of money. Lynn, I actually think they'll keep Lynn. I love him in a six-man role, especially with that Rockets team. I think that he's kind of finding his own way here. He's kind of finding his niche, and I think another year in that role, he'd be really good. And I think they should keep him because they could move that, but I don't know how big the market is for acquiring him and getting a big player in return if you're the Rockets. At Wibbly Ball, Wibbly O'Ball's a Basketball Jones legend and now a Starters legend. I've heard rumors that both LeBron and Love are headed to the Spurs. Can you talk a little about this? Yes! Let's start these rumors. If the Wolves are going to lose Kevin Love, Love and LeBron to the Spurs 2015. Let's make this happen. It would be so good and keep Greg Popovich around. For those of you that don't really get us, that reference, Ethan Sherwood-Strauss and I talked about this idea of those two trying to play for San Antonio, or San Antonio really going after any big free agent because of their success and because of the system, because of what they do for players. Why isn't this more of a destination? So if the Wolves have to lose Love, let's make sure he ends up on the Spurs so we can really, really maximize what he does out there. And then another question for Wibbly. Hit us with a bold playoff prediction? I will. Here's a bold playoff prediction. One of the 6, 7, 8 teams in the West, whether it's the Warriors, Grizzlies, Suns, or Mavs, one of those teams is advancing to the second round. How about that for a bold prediction? Either the Spurs, the Thunder, or the Clippers will go down in the first round, and if it doesn't happen, you asked me to make a bold prediction, so I can't be really chastised for that kind of thing. At ESL Barry wants to know, the question I am thinking a lot about at the moment is, Durant is the second best player in the game since, I would say, 2011. No offense to Kobe, Dwight Howard, those guys. I would say Kevin Durant has been the second best player in the league since 2011. And even though he wasn't as good as he is now, he was still better than everybody else not named LeBron James. At Wilcox 1232, who is the most likely free agents to swap teams in restricted free agency this summer? Would the Pistons not match Monroe? It's a good question about guys swapping. I'm not totally sure who to take there, but I think if Joe Dumars somehow keeps his job this summer, wouldn't shock me if the Pistons either did a sign-and-trade for Monroe, or just decided not to match because they've got so much money locked up in Josh Smith, and they move Josh Smith to the four next to Andre Drummond, and it's more of a defensive fit for them. Blah blah blah. I could definitely see that happening if Joe Dumars sticks around. As for anybody else, other possible restricted free agents we have this summer: Avery Bradley, Jordan Crawford, Lance Stephenson, Evan Turner. Lance Stephenson's restricted? I don't think Lance Stephenson is restricted. Maybe he is. Ryan Kelly, Kent Bazemore, Ed Davis, Ekpe Udoh. Let's see who else is there. That might be the big ones. Eric Bledsoe, Isaiah Thomas. I guess I would go with Isaiah Thomas and then Gordon Hayward. I guess Isaiah Thomas, Bledsoe, and Turner, I could see those guys going somewhere else in restricted free agency. Bledsoe simply for the fact that, he's been great this season and he's got such high potential, but they did remove part of that meniscus. I don't think they removed the whole thing, but they removed part of that meniscus with his knee surgery this year. He didn't opt for repair. That's scary. That's scary long term, and maybe the Suns will be confident that they can work around that with their incredible Warlock training staff, but that's a scary thing long term to have to deal with and think about, especially if you're having to shell out max money. And then the Kings, they already have a lot committed. Can they, if they hadn't signed Carl Landry this offseason, they'd have more flexibility for this long term. But can you afford $8-9 million to Isaiah Thomas when you already have the commitments you do financially? Are you going to pay close to luxury tax or the luxury tax for that kind of team, a team that's not going to make the playoffs next year most likely? you know, that could really influence their decision on whether or not they keep or match a high price offer sheet for Isaiah Thomas. Wilcox 1232 also wants to know, what can the Pelicans do to surround Anthony Davis with talent? What talent do they need? You know, I don't know if the Tyreek Evans thing is going to work out. I don't know if Eric Gordon's going to work out there. I like the Jrue Holiday move. I like Ryan Anderson being next to him. I would surround that guy with shooters. I would really, you know, we talked about this with Ethan. We talked about this with Matt. Maybe Royce as well. I love the idea of Stan Van Gundy coaching this Pelicans team and recreating what he had with the Magic during their great run. And so you surround with shooters. You surround with guys who can penetrate and shoot as well. Maybe get him a nice backup, which they have Jeff Withey. They have Greg Steensma. They have Jason Smith. Like, they have options to keep. But I like, be patient. Try to move Eric Gordon if you can. Try to develop Tyreek Evans a little bit more. And then just get as many shooters as you can. No Al-Farouq Aminu, no guys like that. Like, you need shooters around this guy. At Worm21, Worm with an E, if Jabari and Embiid stay in school, how can all these tanking teams go about asking for a do-over? I think there's a form. I think it's the 1144 form that you submit to the NBA. It's rarely ever accepted and approved, but I believe there is a form that they have to fill out. At Derek Aaron RN, did Payne Dunk get him into the lottery? Weird to say, but was mid-round pick before. He's a stretch four, potential now maybe more. He is an insane athlete. I know scouts really like him. It's just, you know, his age kind of works him against him a little bit, which is crazy, but that's just how it is now. It wouldn't shock me. Like, things like that, it doesn't take a lot of genius stuff to catapult a guy into the lottery. Anthony Randolph, Tyrus Thomas, like, these are all guys that, hey, a lot of LSU guys. These are all guys that had good runs that just, like, Joe Alexander, that these incredible displays of athleticism that really just got teams excited about them. Adrian Payne doing that, except he's actually good, would not be crazy. If he should go in the lottery. I really think he should go in the lottery. I'll actually have a mock draft. I know Matt Moore's going to have a mock draft next week after the championship games. You may see Adrian Payne in my draft lottery. I'll have to figure out where he goes, but that's a really good move for whatever team is at the end of the lottery. At Whammy Giveaway, Alfredo Rodriguez wants to know, is Paul Griffin Jordan a true big three, or do they need a true superstar like Love, Melo, or Durant to qualify as a big three? No, I think that can qualify as a big three. Like, DeAndre Jordan clearly has to keep improving. He's had a great year. If he could become like one of the top defensive players in the league, which I know he's improved a lot defensively this year, but he's still not there. If he could become one of the top defensive players in the league, this is something that, like, because Paul and Griffin are so good, it wouldn't take another superstar to make a big three. I do think it's very possible. I don't know how they're going to get Durant or Kevin Love so to put next to Paul and Griffin, so I don't know why those guys are in. I guess the Melo thing is legitimately a possibility in some small way, but no, they can be fine as is. At DSOR8, how many coaches would you take long-term over Jason Kidd? That's a good question. I'd definitely take Doc. I'd still take Pop. I think you can convince Pop to stay, but I also am just quite enamored with Pop. I'd take Stan Van Gundy over him. I'd probably take Jeff Hornacek. I'm trying to do this off the top of my head, so I'm sure I'll miss somebody. I think I'd take Kidd over Michael Malone. I'd take Kidd over Stotts. I'd take Carlisle over Kidd. I'd take Kidd over McHale. I'd take Kidd over Monty Williams. I'd take Mike Budenholz over Kidd. I think I'd take Brad Stevens over Kidd, although I'm not sure. I think I'd take Kidd over Brett Brown, but that's another one I'm not quite sure about. Thibodeau clearly over Kidd. I'd take Vogel over Kidd. I mean, I'd say Kidd's in like that top 15 for long-term coaches, just off the top of my head. I'm sure I'd take Spoelstra over Kidd. You know, Kidd's still got a lot to prove, but at least he's not the bumbling idiot we thought he was early in the season when he was spilling drinks to get extra timeouts, which I think it's a brilliant move. I don't care what anybody says. That's a brilliant move. But yeah, Kidd looks like a good coach. He figured out to go small ball. It's really opened up the versatility, and the stuff he's implemented is pretty good. And I think, you know, developing that over the next few years, and in a few years, he could be one of the better coaches in the league. And then the last one, at E-Jiggle again, why does Sherwood Strauss try so hard to be a human thesaurus? # such vocab. Ethan just talks that way. Ethan loves his tropes. He loves his Potemkin Potemkin theories. He is a guy that has read a lot. He's smart, and I think he lets that get in the way of his speaking when he tries to come up with these $100 words when $10 words would do. That's all for today. Thanks for submitting your questions using the EOB Pod hashtag on Twitter. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes. Leave a review if you can. It really does help our ratings and lets our bosses know that, hey, people actually listen and like us. You can follow me on Twitter at Talk Hoops if you don't already. Follow at Ion Basketball. And we will not have an episode Monday because I will be on a little mini vacation. But Tuesday we'll have a couple episodes and we'll be back to a regular schedule. And then we've got the playoffs, I think, starting next weekend. Thanks, guys.